Late in the evening, here's some emergency content for you. The Brewers did the thing that everyone speculated they were going to do. I personally did not think they were going to do ever since the final out of the NLCS. The trade rumors about Freddy Peralta began. And here we are, late on a Wednesday night. Freddy Peralta has been traded to the New York Mets. It's another trade between David Stearns and Matt Arnold for some arms. We'll talk about that. It's the second time that David Stearns has traded for Freddy Peralta in his career. Of course, it was one of the first moves that Stearns made when he became Brewers general manager back in the 2015-2016 offseason. That trade obviously bore fruit. It was a great deal, and then getting him to sign the extension. We're going to talk about the guys that are coming here to Milwaukee mostly, being Brandon Sproat, a right-handed pitcher, and Jet Williams, a shortstop prospect, one of the top shortstops in the minor leagues. Also with Freddy Peralta, Tobias Myers is headed to Queens to join them. So we'll talk about roster implications for the Brewers toward the back end of all this. Let's just start right here at the top, though, and say the thing that's on everybody's mind. Is this the Brewers being cheap? In my opinion, absolutely not. Here is why I think this is a difference between trading Freddie with 1 year of control, $8 million was owed to him. The Brewers picked up that team option back in November. Why this, in my opinion, is different than trading Corbin Burnes or Devin Williams in their final year heading into free agency. For one, Freddie's value was far exceeding his $8 million salary for this season. That being said, you're going to get more value back. If you still believe in $10 million for every win, you know, for war, he is worth a lot more than what you are paying him. So the thought is, all right, you've got surplus value there. That means if you're going to trade him, you're going to need to receive surplus value back. This is different from the Corbin Burnes deal because when he was traded to Baltimore, there was the salary tag on it, over $15 million in his final year of arbitration. And the thought that, hey, he's probably not going to stay with your team going to Baltimore. They obviously didn't make an offer to him and ended up going to Arizona. But the point being is that you knew that was going to be a one-year deal, whatever team that Corbin went to. You don't know that with Freddy Peralta. I'm sure he is going to test free agency. But the Brewers knew, and quite frankly, after seeing Dylan Cease get over $200 million, I'll flash the numbers up here real quick. Freddy Peralta and Dylan Cease have very similar careers to this point. Freddie's going to get paid at the end of next season. That's part of the reason the Brewers are in this saying, hey, we've seen this story before. Let's make sure you get something out of him. Quite frankly, coming off of a career year, best year of Freddy Peralta's career. I know there's the sentimental value of, oh my goodness, an opening day starter, you know, the brace face when he first arrived in 2018 to becoming a dad and becoming an all-star and an opening day guy. And he's the next one on the list that the Brewers trade with 1 year of team control remaining. If you want to believe that this is a quote-unquote cheap move, you can believe that, but I'm going to reiterate from the start. The Brewers did not need to trade Freddy Peralta, but you can frame this in a way that says, technically, they're dealing from a surplus. And when you look at the list of candidates that could be on the opening day roster in the starting rotation, I'm not even going to mention Freddy's name here. Brandon Woodruff, Quinn Priester, Jacob Mizorowski, Chad Patrick, Logan Henderson, Aaron Ashby, the newly acquired Brandon Sproat, Coleman Crowe, who was also a former Mets prospect, Robert Gasser, you get my point. The Brewers have capable, ready, and willing, controllable assets ready to take over in this rotation in their final year with Brandon Woodruff, most likely. That being said, I know fans are going to react the way they want to react and want to say that this is a, you know, this is a cheap move. We need a salary cap. We need to make all these changes to the way that the game's economics go. And they're allowed to do that. That's fine. I want to continue to reiterate, the Brewers signing that extension ahead of the 2020 season. Now, granted, we didn't know what was going to happen, you know, a month later after he signed that five-year deal within the two option years. But he would have been a free agent before last season. Okay, so you wouldn't have even had his best season of his career if he did not sign that deal. And maybe you would have got one more year out of him. But that was a win-win for both sides, in my opinion. And hopefully Freddie stays healthy this season and he can go get paid and maybe doesn't start against the Brewers or has his worst start of the season against Brewers because now he's on the other side. What are the Brewers getting back here? Let's talk about that. Brandon Sproat is the first one we're going to talk about here. And I got four just simple questions. The who, the what, the why, and the how of what the Brewers are going to see with these two players. Starting with Sproat, let's just give you the who. 25 years old, 6'3", 215 pounds, second rounder, and he's a rare one out of Florida in that he was drafted twice by the New York Mets, both in 2022 and in 2023. He decided to go back for a fourth year at Florida. Remember, everyone got an extra year of eligibility. NIL made this a little complicated, but the point being is he decided to go back for one more year, improved his draft stock, and still signed at slot in 2023. He was older than most of the level in his first year in the minor leagues in 2024, moved all the way up and got to AAA in 2025, and then made his big league debut this season, meaning he has all three of his option years remaining, which is something the Brewers obviously covet and something they're going to be keeping an eye on heading into this spring training. The what with Brandon Sproat. In 2025, he threw 121 innings in AAA. It wasn't the same success that he had had to this point in his minor league career. Part of that could be tinkering. Part of that could be a little bit of his arm slot getting out of whack. We'll talk about the actual numbers that go into that here in a moment. But 4.24 ERA, a FIP just about the same at 4.18. Strikeouts per nine went down. Walks per nine went up. And thus, the strikeout rate minus walk rate went down. All that being said, you look at the arsenal and you look at some of the movement statistics here on these pitches and you can see what the Brewers are excited about. So here's the why that we're talking about. He's got a sinker. He's got a sweeper. He's got a changeup. He's got a curveball, and he's still got a four-seamer, and he's also got a firmer, tighter slider, dare I say cutter, with what the Brewers are able to do with these guys. But the things that I think that really jumped out to the Brewers is this sweeper that he can throw to both righties and lefties. He didn't face, you know, he faced the Reds, who were a playoff team, and then he faced the Marlins in that final weekend of the regular season. He had two other starts in there, too. I don't put a lot of stock into his big league results yet, given it was so new and so fresh. But the other why part of all of this is the fastball velo. Consistently 95 to 98, he has touched triple digits in AAA. He's one of those candidates, like we talk about, with so many other Brewers guys, to have multiple fastballs. He already has a feel for the sinker. Maybe he learns how to develop location a little bit better with his four-seam fastball. You can see the heat map of that pitch in particular here. And then furthermore, the changeup's really good. I mean, there's some swing and misses on this pitch. He can tunnel it well with the changeup and the sinker. Three distinct results out of the same window is very, very talented from this lower arm slot that he possesses. And he also doesn't really have a glaring weakness against lefties, at least in AAA. There wasn't a glaring red flag there. Being he's a low slot righty, lefties generally get a good view of that. Maybe that's why the sweeper plays so well against lefties. So what's the how? What are the Brewers going to do to Brandon Sproat to make him even better? You know, the pitching lab, we talk about this all the time with prospects that the Brewers are able to acquire. Well, he's probably a candidate to make the opening day roster like we just listed. But at the same time, because he's got all three options, the Brewers aren't necessarily in a rush to send him. And it quite frankly makes it a little bit easier to, you know, to stomach that, hey, let's give you some time in AAA Nashville, learn the Brewers way, learn the system, get you on the track, man, get you on the biomech, and get you on everything that we want to see to learn what it takes to pitch the Brewer way. And quite frankly, when you talk about velo, maybe some command issues, he's got a signature secondary pitch, man, like, Freddie didn't really have a signature secondary pitch. Yes, he had a breaking ball in 2018, the curveball, but like it didn't move like this pitch, and it didn't have the same, you know, sort of results against it in AAA. So I'm excited to see what development can come from this. Sproat is nearly a consensus top 100 prospect. The only one that didn't have him in the top 100 last year was MLB.com, but both Fangraphs and Baseball America had him in their top 100, and both all three publications had him as a top five Mets prospect. So Brandon Sproat, one of the pieces in return from the Mets. Now let's talk about a crowded middle infield for the Brewers and their farm system, and that's going to be Jett Williams. Let's go with the who. He's 22 years young from Texas, 5'7", another short king, 175 pounds, a first rounder back in 2022 out of his high school in the Dallas area. He's yet to make his major league debut. The clock hasn't started. He's not yet on the 40-man roster. Doesn't need to be protected yet. Split time between AA and AAA this year, 130 games, a full season. 261 combined across the two levels and 828 OPS. But when you look a little deeper, AAA numbers, naturally, as he's so young for the level, were down a little bit, 209 and 718 and just 134 plate appearances. He did crank 7 homers in AAA, though, something to be encouraged by, 17 homers total on the season. And when we talk about another short player, another guy, oh my gosh, he doesn't have pop, why can't the Brewers get pop? Pop isn't necessarily growing on trees right now in the minor leagues, nor is it super available. When you look at what the Brewers farm has suddenly shifted into in the recent draft classes, right? Early it was, you know, early 2020s, it was, you know, athletes, and you think of Tyler Black, and you think of Sal Frelick, and you think of Bryce Turang. The pop will come, they'll grow into their bodies, but they wanted athletes first. But now, lately, they started leaning into a little bit more college pop and some more experienced pop and maybe some bigger tools out of the draft that maybe include a little bit more power with some risk of some other identities of, like, you know, maybe there's some more swing and miss there. Maybe there's not a sure defensive mold. I don't think Jett Williams is necessarily in that camp. He's going to play up the middle. The camp is split on whether or not he's going to be a shortstop, second baseman. He even got a little time in center field with the Mets last year because they were not shy about the fact that he was going to be a factor in their big league team in 2026. Whether it was in the outfield, they had no problem saying that they would put him in the outfield in the big leagues, even though he only had, you know, half a season of AAA in the outfield. But yet the Brewers now bring him into a crowded room up the middle and on the infield, for that matter, on their form. More on that in a moment. So what else is the what about Jett Williams? What are they excited about? So he's power speed. You know, when you watch his swing on video here, you see a big leg kick. You see a lot of pull side pop. But I noticed looking at some of this video, he does have two different leg kicks. You know, with two strikes, it's a little shorter. When he's ahead of the count, he'll take a big daddy hack like you'd expect. And I have access to minor league bat speed numbers, and he's right on par with the rest of the young Brewers, averaged about 71 miles an hour for his bat speed, which is pretty much league average. League average is 72 miles an hour, and again, young for the level, he's 22, he's going to grow into his body still. To think that that can touch 72, 73, 74, maybe one day, see some bat speed gains, and maybe you see somebody that can add a little bit more pop. Already 17 home runs out of 5'7", like, let's put some respect on the short king's name here. The other thing about him is that he sees the zone well, and it's no surprise that when you go to the board on Fangraphs, I'm a big fan of Fangraphs, as you all know, when you look back at the 2015 updated top prospect list, and you look at pitch selection as far as scouting and for position players, and one of the tools, obviously, is pitch selection. Jesus Mate was graded as an 80. More on him in a moment. But then you see other Brewers, you know, not far down the list. Tyler Black, Brock Wilkin, both graded out as 70s. Jett Williams is also graded out as a 70 for pitch selection. This is no surprise. The Brewers love athletic types that understand the strike zone and can play up the middle. So the Brewers see, hey, you've got a solid hit tool. You can grow into a little bit of power. Not going to rely on it. Can see somebody that can get on base consistently. He's always had very good walk rates in the minor leagues. So the why. Why would you add another shortstop slash up the middle type for a crowded roster? When you just look at the picture right now, we've heard the support from the Brewers front office about Joey Ortiz and about shortstop, and no, the Brewers are never going to be a candidate in Bo Bichette. No, by the way, he's not even playing shortstop anymore for the New York Mets. He's going to third base. The point being is there wasn't really a shortstop that fit the Brewers on the market this year, but now all of a sudden, you have some real competition happening this spring training. Is Jett Williams good enough to be an opening day shortstop for the Brewers? I tend to doubt it. I think that's a little extreme to think about a guy that was just acquired being your opening day shortstop the next year. That being said, do they think Bryce can prepare for shortstop from the beginning of spring training as opposed to it being thrown on him in the middle of spring training, and you can train Jett Williams for second base, and then Joey becomes more of a utility role? Because I think we all love Andrew Monasterio, and this impacts him as well, because Joey obviously has all that experience at third base from two seasons ago when Willy Adames was on the team. He obviously is a natural shortstop. He can play second base too. If he's suddenly your utility bat off the bench, that's certainly very valuable too. Or is Jett Williams going to play the outfield? You know, the Brewers obviously have a logjam out there. They already traded Isaac Collins. There's questions, you know, is Garrett Mitchell going to be involved on this opening day roster? Who's playing center? Is it Churio? Is it Frelick? Is it Perkins? Is Yelly going to play a lot of the outfield? But now you add somebody with a little bit of versatility like Williams, who maybe can do that in a pinch as well. But what does this mean for like Jesus Mate or Cooper Pratt or some of these other young prospects that are on their way up in the Brewers organization? Because now all of a sudden, you've got Andrew Fisher and Brock Wilkin over at third. You've got the previously mentioned Pratt and Mate on the way. I mean, they can't all be on the field at the same time in AAA. I imagine Fisher will be in AA, but Wilkin and Pratt will be in AAA. I imagine Mate will be in AA. Does Williams play second base in AAA? I mean, these are questions to be asked. It's going to be very complicated to figure out this dance, and performance always rises to the top as to say who's going to be the guy that takes over and maybe moves forward. And I don't think this impacts the outlook at all on Cooper Pratt or Jesus Mate. And quite frankly, it's going to be an important year for Cooper because, you know, he had some injuries last year and you can't really do anything about that. But now we're going to see StatCast data on him, and we're going to see him in AAA, I imagine, in Nashville, see a little bit better pitching, continue to see arms that are older than him and what he can do against that sort of talent. And I don't think this impacts Mate in the slightest. He's still at least a full season away from being on the big league roster unless he hits like 400 in AA and AAA, and then we're having a crazy conversation in the middle of the year. But I don't think that impacts them in the immediate term. Maybe we're talking about this in 2027, in 2028 spring trainings of what kind of position battle this could look like in the future. So let's get to the hurt here real quick before we wrap things up. So Freddie was worth more than $8 million, like we said, but it still hurts to let him go, to let him walk. And I shouldn't say let him walk, but trade him to the Mets, you know, the team that knocked you out 2 years ago in heartbreaking fashion, the team that took your general manager and some of his lieutenants. And it's just like, man, like to the Mets? Well, for Freddie, maybe he gets an extension there, but like I showed you earlier, he's going to be somebody that the Brewers can't afford, just straight up. If you're mad about it, if you think that Mark Adonasio needs to open his pocketbook, like it doesn't work like that. They don't have the money. And that's not meant to be a disparaging, oh my goodness, like get a new owner. No. It's economics, man. Like we all took economics in high school. You need to bring in more money than you spend. And the Brewers just don't bring in as much money as the Mets. It's just a matter of life. Life ain't fair and the world is mean. Sturgill Simpson taught me that. But anyway, you can be frustrated that this is the economic world that we live in baseball. I understand that. But kudos to the Brewers. And this is where I'll always defend the Brewers and their front office. You can complain about the haves and the have-nots, but what are you going to do about it? And the Brewers do something about it. They don't sit on their hands and throw their hands and, oh, I can complain. Oh, well, see, like other teams do across Major League Baseball. Oh, we can never compete. No, the Brewers get creative. They do the uncomfortable things, maybe not the most popular things, like trading an all-star like Freddie Peralta. And, you know, we talk about arbitration cases with William Contreras, Corbin Burns, Josh Hader, yada, yada, yada. I know it sucks in the PR battle, but the battle is played on the dirt and the battle is played on the field. And the Brewers feel like they now continue to have young, controllable pieces that they can continue to bring wins to Milwaukee. That's why they're doing this. I didn't really talk about Tobias at all because it was such a lost year for him in 2025. He had the oblique strain in spring training, slow start, comes back, wasn't sharp, gets optioned, gets pulled by Murph in a game in Chicago. It was just a weird, lost year. That being said, he's been through a lot in his professional career. There's no doubt in my mind he'll bounce back. His role, obviously, is going to be to be determined with the Mets. But again, I just listed off all the names that are to be considered for the starting rotation. I don't think Myers is going to crack that list. And I like Tobias a lot. Maybe he learns to continue to refine that splitter cutter combo to go with his riding fastball, and he becomes an effective reliever, adds a little bit of velo. But that being said, that's probably what put this over the line, because we saw the rumors of this deal for being for Sproat and for Williams, and a lot of Mets people were saying, absolutely not, that's an overpay. You add in one more controllable arm that's optionable. All right, makes it a little more palatable for 1 year of Freddie Peralta. So all this is to say, what about the Central? What about the division? Everybody else has added. The Brewers now officially aren't really adding. I mean, they've added prospects, of course, but the only big league arm, established big league arm they've added is Angel Zerpa. And when you think about it, yeah, I understand the apprehension. And we do this, seems like, every year. How are the Brewers going to manage 90 wins yet again? And the Cubs got better. The Cardinals are tearing it down, so they don't really count. The Pirates are marginally better. They still have maybe the best pitching staff, in the Central now that Freddie Peralta is gone. You look at the Reds, they made the playoffs last year, and they still have a very good rotation. And you know, when you look at the rest of the National League picture, the Braves should be healthy again. The Diamondbacks will get healthy in the middle of the year. And then you look at the Padres, they're still a giant. You've still got the Giants. I mean, the National League is a bloodbath, and there's some quality teams up and down, but I don't think this is a step back by any means, in my opinion, because the Brewers trust their process, and who are we to doubt that process at this point in the Matt Arnold, David Stearns world that the Brewers have been in since 2016? The process works pretty darn well. I know it hasn't brought the Commissioner's Trophy here to Milwaukee yet, but one day it will. And I really do think the Brewers did a decent job here. Honestly, I don't like giving grades to trades immediately in the aftermath of it all, but it feels like across the industry, the Brewers got a little more value than what Freddie was probably going to other teams. They get a controllable arm. They get a position player at a position of potential need for the 2026 season. And now spring training has some position battles to watch for. Who's in the starting rotation? Who moves to the bullpen? Who's going to be up the middle? All that is to come soon. So let's do a little 20 minutes or so talking about the Brewers trade of Freddie Peralta. If you want more, we'll talk about it more on Brewers Weekly, Thursday night, 8 p.m. on 620 WTMJ. Ironically, I had taped an interview with Jim Henderson. That will also be uploaded here to the station accounts as well. But hey, man, the Freddie Peralta era in Milwaukee is over. That means there are only two players left on the active roster from 2018. Brandon Woodruff, who's now likely your opening day starter, and Christian Yelich. All right. And Matt Arnold, we trust, as they say, right? So I hope you enjoyed, learned something maybe in this, saw some video of these new prospects that the Brewers have. And we'll talk to you Thursday night for Brewers Weekly. You can follow me on social media at Dom_Catronio on X, and then also over on Instagram, Dom C Baseball. All right, that's going to do it for us. Until next time, keep on swinging.